This is VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. Reports from Ukraine's Donbas region say Ukraine and Russian forces are reportedly waging a street-to-street battle for the eastern industrial city of Severodonetsk Monday, with the situation changing hour to hour. Severodonetsk is key to Russia's aim to take over the eastern Donbas region. It is the largest remaining Ukrainian-held city in Luhansk province. City Mayor Oleksandr Stryuk said street fighting was raging, but told Ukrainian television, "We have focused enough forces and resources there to beat back attacks on the city." Both sides claim they have inflicted huge casualties on each other. Meanwhile, ceremonies were held in Normandy, France, Monday, commemorating the Allied invasion of German-occupied France during World War II, otherwise known as D-Day. Associated Press correspondent Shelley Adler says Ukraine was on the minds of those marking the day.
U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley spoke about Ukraine's struggle in its fight against Russia's invasion during a ceremony on the 78th anniversary of the D-Day landing.
The fight for Ukraine is about honoring these veterans of World War II. It's about maintaining the so-called global rules-based international order, the order that was established by the dead that are buried here.
For the past 2 years, D-Day ceremonies were reduced to a minimum due to COVID-19 lockdowns. This year, crowds of French and international visitors, including veterans in their 90s, were back in Normandy to remember those that were lost. I'm Shelley Adler.
General Milley said the United States and its allies will continue providing support for Ukraine in the spirit of the soldiers who died during D-Day. This is VOA News. This week's U.S.-hosted Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles will be missing a major player, as Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador said Monday he will not attend. López Obrador said Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard will represent Mexico at the summit. The Biden administration did not invite the governments of Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua to the summit, which led López Obrador to make his decision to stay away. The Mexican president said there cannot be a summit if all countries are not invited, or there can be one, but it is to continue with all politics of interventionism. López Obrador did say he would meet with Biden in Washington next month. The summit is scheduled to run from Monday to June 10th. Biden is expected to attend the summit on Thursday. Billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk has accused the social media platform Twitter of actively resisting and thwarting his information rights as the Tesla founder attempts to get information about fake and spam accounts on the platform. The accusation came in a letter Musk sent to Twitter officials Monday in which Musk warned he would walk away from the $44 billion deal to take over the company should Twitter not provide the information he's asking for. In the letter, Musk said he believes Twitter is transparently refusing to comply with its obligations under the merger agreement. Associated Press correspondent Tom Krischer says Twitter has provided the information about fake accounts on the platform several times in the past.
Twitter has disclosed the number of bot accounts that it's had, saying that it has fewer than 5% of its accounts are fake, and it's disclosed that in filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission for multiple years now. So Musk should have seen that, and he should have known that prior to when he made the bid for the company.
Krischer said Musk has said in the past he believes Twitter has underestimated the number of fake accounts to inflate the actual number of Twitter users. Twitter has not commented on Musk's letter. Twitter stock fell by over 5% at early trading Monday. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is facing a criminal investigation after a revelation that he failed to report the theft of about $4 million in cash from his farm in North Limpopo province. An account of the theft is contained in an affidavit by the country's former head of intelligence, Arthur Fraser, who's opened a case against Ramaphosa. The South African president has denied the theft, but claims that he reported it to the head of his VIP protection unit, who did not report it to the police. In South Africa, it is illegal not to report a crime, and according to Fraser's affidavit, Ramaphosa tried to conceal the theft, which happened in February of 2020. Repeating the hour's top news story, reports from Ukraine say Ukraine and Russian forces are reportedly waging a street-to-street battle for the eastern industrial city of Severodonetsk Monday. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. This.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, the attack at a church in Nigeria by gunmen has been described as vile and satanic. Also, Ethiopian authorities have accused drivers for aid groups of delivering banned equipment to the embattled Tigray region. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The town of Owo, Nigeria, is in mourning after yesterday's attack on a crowded church. President Muhammadu Buhari called the attack heinous. The governor of Ondo State called it a terrible massacre, and Pope Francis is praying for the victims. Dozens of people in St. Francis Catholic Church were injured or killed in the attack by unidentified gunmen. VOA House of Service journalist Hassan Umaru Tambuwal is in Owo. He describes a gruesome scene to my colleague, Kate Pound-Dawson.
Peter's Church, where the church was attacked yesterday, Sunday, and I saw many, many things there. I saw blood in the church floor. Anyway, all around the church, there is blood. I entered the main room of the church. Even the altar is damaged. I saw the remnant of blood, remnant of clothes. So they were shattered by the gunshots.
Now, outside the church, are there people gathered, or are the police keeping crowds away?
Definitely outside the church, you can see some vehicles parked. Most of them, their glasses were shattered. And the people gathered there to just sympathize with the victims and see what happened in that church. Many people are there. If you look at their faces, you will see that they are sad. They are annoyed. Even most of them are angry on what happened. Because if you talk to them, some of them, even they will not answer you. They'll just be nodding their head. Some will just be shaking. They don't talk. They don't say anything. Then outside that church, you will see some, let's say, the relatives of the victims. They are there again to see how that attack has happened yesterday.
Is there an update on the number of victims, the number of those who were injured or killed? Or also, is there any confirmation of whether anyone was kidnapped from the church?
About the casualty, the number of the people killed is not up to now ascertained. Because I talked to the police PRO, public relationship officer, she said up to now, they don't have actual figure of the people killed in that church. The same thing, many people that got injured, they don't know the numbers of the people got injured because they are many and they have been taken to different hospitals for medical care. Then, and about the kidnapping, some people in the town speculated that a pastor was kidnapped. But when I asked the police, they said they don't hear that one yet. And another thing in Owo now, banks are not working. Schools are shut down. The markets are shut down. There's no businesses, no movement of people. Even the movement is not free. You can see people moving slowly without harness. They may open the shops maybe 2 days or 2 to 3 days coming. Because the government has visited the Ondo State governor has visited the palace of the Oba in that town to understand what happened there. The same thing the Minister of Interior, Rahul Arugbesola, visited the town again. And this town now is receiving big government officials from federal and other states to see what happened. The same thing, most of these Obas and Emirs, all the political leaders and religious leaders, they are coming to Owo in order to sympathize with the people of Owo town.
That was Hassan Omaru Tambawal, a reporter with VOA's House of Service. He spoke to VOA's Kate Pound Dawson by phone from Owo. As reported earlier, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has condemned what he called the heinous killings of worshippers at a Catholic church in the country's southwest. The president said in a statement that his government mourns the dead in the St. Francis Catholic Church in Owo, in Ondo State, and sympathizes with their families. Buhari urged emergency agencies to swing into action and treat the wounded. Reports from Owo said gunmen disguised themselves as worshippers, then set off explosive devices and opened fire at parishioners, killing dozens. Ondo State Governor Rotimi Akeredola described the attack as vile and satanic and vowed that his administration will commit resources to hunt down the gunmen and bring them to justice. David Aworawo is a professor of international relations and strategic studies at the University of Lagos. Speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye, he says the incident has made a strong case for the establishment of state police in the country to check crime in rural communities.
Well, first, condolences to the families of those who lost their lives and those injured, and to Nigerians at large, because everybody is shocked by what happened. It is horrific. It is unfortunate that Nigeria is degenerating and that the security architecture is not seemed to be inadequate to rise up to the occasion. It is a tragedy of immense proportion. It's a tragedy that has the potential to create the condition for more violence if the right things are not done.
Yes, sir. Talking about the inability of the authorities to do the right thing, do you foresee more of these attacks as the days come by?
Certainly, because the people who are perpetrating the killings, the violent people who are carrying out these killings, they seem to be determined to disrupt the peace of the country and kill people who have a different opinion and culture as theirs. And what should stop them is government preparedness, robust government response to ensure that even if they want to do it, they are prevented from doing it. There is nothing to suggest that the government has that capacity right now. So if you put the two together, that is the fact that these people are determined to continue to cause, to wreak havoc, and the government's incapacity to respond in a robust manner to ensure that these attacks do not take place, it leads to one conclusion, and that is that the attacks like this will likely continue.
Sir, some security analysts and some opinion leaders in the country have said that one way of checking this kind of attacks is the establishment or creation of state police. What's your take on this, sir?
This is something that is long overdue. And maybe now that things have turned topsy-turvy, and the idea whose time has come. All over the world, policing is local. Crime, it takes place in the local setting, the local environment. And, the capacity of societies to develop security architecture at the local level to be able to anticipate attacks and and violence and those who the bad guys and take preemptive measures to prevent these things from happening is the bedrock of good security management and policing all over the world. The fact that the Nigerian security system does not follow that pattern is a misnomer. It's an aberration. Hopefully, with all of these things happening now, the government will take measures to ensure that state police, local policing, is allowed to function in the country.
That was David Awarawo, Professor of International Relations and Strategic Studies at the University of Lagos, speaking by phone with reporter Mike Mbonye. Ethiopian authorities have accused drivers for aid groups of delivering unapproved fuel and banned equipment such as satellite phones to the embattled Tigray region. Halima Tumani reports from Addis Ababa.
Amid efforts to provide aid to millions of people in Tigray, the Ethiopian federal government says commercial drivers of aid trucks are smuggling in banned products. On a visit Saturday to the northwestern Afar region, Deputy Prime Minister Demeke Mekonnen said that the trucks are carrying equipment, which he said is being transferred to the rebel Tigray People's Liberation Front. Mitiku Kasa Gutile, Commissioner for the Ethiopia Disaster Risk Management Agency, spoke to VOA.
The drivers of the commercial fleet has taken and allowed supplies such as extra fuel with barrel, satellite phone and other materials.
Contacted by VOA, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs declined to comment on the Ethiopian government's accusation. The government recently declared a ceasefire to allow assistance to reach Tigray for the first time since mid-December 2021. Aid agencies have previously raised concern that while the government authorized fuel for humanitarian operations into Tigray, the volume was insufficient and reserves were at low levels. Commissioner Mitiku says due to the alleged violations, new measures will be put in place to prevent the transport of unauthorized goods into Tigray.
When the partners have entered the contractual agreement, they have to put additional articles to hinder such type of wrongdoing from the commercial fleet side, so that the commercial fleet owners will take responsibility. According to the legal law, the government will take action on the drivers.
Aid agencies are still seeking permission to transport more fuel to the north so they can distribute more humanitarian supplies, including life-saving therapeutic milk and foods to about 240 health facilities across the Afar region. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The Botswana government wants former President Ian Khama to be extradited to face trial for illegal possession of firearms. Khama skipped the country last October, saying he feared for his life. From exile in South Africa, he says he looks forward to answering the allegations. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
A Habron court heard today that the government intends to extradite the former head of state to stand trial. In April, Khama was formally charged with 12 counts of theft of firearms. Also charged are three other high-profile figures, including suspended police commissioner Gabetsu Makope and former intelligence services boss Isaac Khosi. Khama has welcomed extradition, saying he will be able to present his side of the story.
If it is the regime's intention to apply for extradition for me, I would very much welcome that. Because extradition doesn't happen in a manner whereby they put in the application one day and the next day you're back in the country. There's a legal process that has to be followed, which would include an appearance in a South African court. And that's why I would welcome it, because it would give me a wonderful opportunity with my legal team from Botswana, with the growing number of key witnesses in that country, and with the legal team I would put together here in South Africa to expose the lies and fabrications that Masisi and his cronies have been embarking upon against me.
On Monday, the state prosecutor indicated a fifth defendant has been added to the charge sheet. Sihunelo Kono, a former procurement manager at the spy agency, is accused of stealing a pistol during his time as a civil servant. The case continues on August 13. Meanwhile, Khama was unable to travel back for the funeral of his sister, Jacqueline Khama, who died last week.
Her death was very painful. It was unexpected. And not being able to go there and grieve with her, other members of the family and friends was also very painful. But that was also the intention of the regime, because they made it known to us, and they wouldn't have done it publicly, of course, but we have our sources, but they wanted it leaked to us that had we come back, there would have been consequences, which we all know what those would have been.
Kama fell out with his hand-picked successor, President Mokgweetsi Masisi, soon after the transfer of power in 2018. The reason for the frosty relations remains unknown. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yeheye Swuhib in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. In the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, there have been a new deadly attack by the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, militia in Ituri province near the border with Uganda. And the M23 militia has been battling government forces in Rutshuru, several hundred kilometers to the south near the Rwandan border. The ADF and M23 are two of the most powerful rebel groups in the region, where more than 100 militias operate, many of them a legacy of wars in the DRC. The ADF is an Islamist movement that originated in Uganda with ties to the Islamic State militants. M23 is mostly made of members of the Tutsi ethnic community that claims to fight for Tutsi rights. Journalist Jafar Al-Katanti is in Goma in the eastern DRC. He spoke with VOA's Kate Bondawson a short time ago about the attacks.
Militants of Islamic State, known as ADF in DRC, attacked the village of Otomabere in Irumu district of Ituri province, and they killed people. At the moment, we are talking about 25 bodies discovered and more than 30 houses burnt, according to the Civil Society of Ituri. And person of the governor of Ituri said that the governor regrets the horrible attack of ADF and said that the army forces are in pursuit of the enemy.
Now, at the same time we've had the ADF attack, they're still fighting with the M23. Is that correct?
About M23, this morning, there was fighting from Rutshuru in many positions of FRDC and M23. According to the president of M23, FRDC was the first to start fighting. But the spokesperson of FRDC in Kivu said M23 launched the attack to their position. And now the FRDC has communicated to control the position of Runyoni, which was the most important position controlled by M23 for many months now. And fighting still ongoing till now.
ADF attack and the M23 fighting. This comes just a few days before the visit of the King of Belgium. Is there any risk to the King's visit because of this violence in the East?
The attacks are 2,000 kilometers far from where the King will be visiting. The King will visit Kinshasa and Lubumbashi, which are very far from where fighting are. It depends on how the security and all agencies decide, but I think that things are like the King will come, even if fighting still ongoing in eastern Congo.
That was reporter Jafar Al-Katanti speaking with VOA's Kate Bondawson from Goma. Republic of Congo President Denis Sassou Nguesso hosted his DRC counterpart Felix Antoine Tshisekedi in an effort to ease the crisis between the DRC and Rwanda. Sassou Nguesso says peace is critical for both countries and the continent as a whole, since it faces several other more major challenges. Rosie Pioth has the story from Brazzaville.
With the tension between the DRC and Rwanda recently escalating, Sassou Nguesso is asking for everyone's involvement in calming the situation. Sassou Nguesso spoke at a news conference last night at the end of a 48-hour visit by Tshisekedi to Oyo in the north of the country. He says Africa has many challenges to meet and the continent cannot face them without a climate of peace and cooperation among nations. He called for peace between the two countries and asked the heads of states to use ways and mechanisms put in place for the resolution of this crisis by African Union. Tshisekedi thanked Sassou Nguesso for his involvement in resolving this crisis. He urged all parties to join the Nairobi peace process, which he called the last chance to breed a future of peace in East Africa, as well as in the east of the DRC. He invited Rwanda to become actively involved for the benefit of the entire Great Lakes region. For VOA Africa, Rosie Pioth in Brazzaville.
Millions of people around the globe marked World Environment Day yesterday with leaders, business people, and climate campaigners demanding urgent action to conserve and restore the environment. From Makudi County, east of Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports for VOA.
At Siaolwe Primary School, a two-hour drive east of Nairobi, a group of 100 students, teachers and community leaders marked World Environment Day by planting trees and demanding urgent action to help the environment. Tafemas Malatu is the school's head teacher.
By planting trees, we are teaching our children how to conserve the environment. The streams around here, they have dried up due to deforestation, but now we are trying to educate the community and the pupils we have in the school to majorly conserve the environment, continue planting more trees.
14-year-old Charity Kaunda wants to spread that message.
I would like to tell the leaders that we need clean water, not only to drink but to grow trees. Every day it's Earth Day, please support us.
Celebrated annually on the 5th of June, the UN International Day is a global platform for environmental outreach, engaging governments, businesses, civil society, schools, and communities. This year's theme, Only One Earth, calls for collective action to celebrate, protect, and restore our planet. Faith Kilonzo is a youth climate activist.
As we all know, climate change is really affecting a lot of people at the rural areas because sometimes they even lack the means that they can use to be involved in the climate action. We are approaching schools, specifically primary schools, and working with pupils from grade 4 to 6 to ensure they stay longer in schools and they're able to adapt these trees that we are planting. And we are mainly planting indigenous trees.
Speaking at the official ceremony in Sweden, the executive director of the UN Environment Programme, Inge Andersson, said the triple planetary crisis is accelerating, adding that the world is not doing enough to protect Mother Nature. But the young Kenyan environmentalist says working with the youth, especially in Africa, can provide homegrown sustainable solutions.
Young people are the most important change makers in the community. I can sit at a policy table and push for environmental laws and policies, or we can have so many treaties pushing for the same, but it's the people who are at the grassroots level who are affected most. And it's also important to like pass this information to the younger generations so that they can also pass it to the other generations, and it becomes a continuous process. We do not have like a timeline.
Despite the spirited efforts to address deforestation, Kilonzo cites the challenges of working with vulnerable communities, especially due to prolonged lack of rainfall in most dry areas. World Environment Day follows findings from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute that world leaders are failing to prepare for a new era of complex and often unpredictable risks as profound environmental and security crises converge and intensify. Ruben Chama reporting for VOA News from Makueni, Kenya.
Thanks for listening to African